Welcome to Journeys of Empowerment, where real stories, raw truth and powerful shifts come to life. I'm Michiel Sujit Rijt, and around here, we don't do small talk. We spark transformation. Let's go! Still trying to fix performance with new processes, more training or better KPIs? That's not the problem. Behavior is. Neutopia flips the script with a method that actually works. No gimmicks, no fluff. In the awareness workshop, you'll learn why good processes fail in execution, why learning doesn't stick, and how to build teams that own behavior, not just follow rules. Change shouldn't drain you, it should drive you. Dare to lead different? Visit neutopia.nl. What if your job wasn't just a career, but a platform for real change? In this episode, I sit down with Peter Zurp, a leading voice in inclusive procurement at Accenture, ESDP board chair, NGO board member, and a champion for diversity, equity, and authenticity in business. Peter's path shows how personal reflection and professional leadership can intersect to spark systemic transformation. In our conversation, we explore turning supplier diversity into a global business priority, the courage to bring full authenticity into the workplace, overcoming biases, both our own and others, redefining success beyond status, toward meaning and impact, and the radical power of looking inward to grow. Boniface's truth resonated deeply. Authenticity means being honest with yourself first, and then with the world. So let me ask you, when was the last time you looked inward? Not to find flaws, but to recognize the quiet brilliance that makes you, you. Here's Peter's journey. Welcome to Journeys of Empowerment.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it is an absolute honor to have you here. I was really thrilled that you said yes. So, we had a short, interesting conversation. So before we dive in, we were talking about Journeys of Empowerment and what the sort of what started as an intuitive initiative became now more and more clear about the why behind the podcast, and that it's all about it. I came to the belief that the single most overlooked, underappreciated, underutilized asset for personal growth we all carry, I think I found the answer to that in the podcast. And what would you think that might be? The single most overlooked, underutilized asset for personal growth?
Well, I think what I often see with the people I work with is that, you know, I think it's a human thing that we want to conform in a certain stereotype. But I think then we overlook, you know, how we grown as a person. So your own personality, you know, everybody comes with a unique personality that they can bring to the table. And sometimes they forget about it because they want to look like somebody else. Mm. Or they want to, you know, in order to be appreciated, really look at, you know, what does the person expect from me? And then, you know, and giving into that. And I think that's a shame because I think everybody has a very beautiful personality that they can bring to the table that makes you also more comfortable about yourself if you can be yourself. And that brings something positive. And I think that's definitely often overlooked.
Beautiful, beautiful.
I'm not sure you got that out of the podcast, but
I had. And one thing you mentioned is you've grown over time in becoming the person who you are, and that's what I discovered is the single most overlooked and underappreciated and underutilized asset of personal growth is our personal journey. Mm. Because when we take the time, we pause, we reflect, having a conversation, we become aware of a lot of hidden potential gold without knowing it.
Yeah.
So we tend to look outside, the next course, the next job, the next car, the next house, the next holiday, the next whatever, then we are something, or we feel something, or we grow something. And yet, if we just take the time to have a conversation and go deep and see what our personal journey, what we can learn from our personal journey and how we can share that, that's the next one. How can we scale it? Mm-hmm. So I came to the belief, and if it's the single most important, I think it's one of the most important then assets for personal growth is our own personal journey we all carry.
Yeah. So it's probably because people like to look forward rather than look back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reflection. Yeah. Reflection is always very important.
It is.
I do agree.
And why do you think we struggle, or we tend to be finding it challenging to look back?
Well, I think it's the same thing as people don't like failure. I always think, you know, it's sometimes good to fail because you learn from it, and in order to learn from it, you have to reflect. Okay, you know, this didn't go right. Why didn't this go right? How can I be better? Mm-hmm. And by being enabled to do that, you first have to look back. So I do agree with you that you have to think about what's your personal journey, what's your career journey, you know, what went well, what didn't go well in life so far, first of all, not making the same mistake.
No.
Although sometimes we do. But also you learn from it, and it makes you a better person, I think. And it also, and that maybe comes back to what I thought it was, personality, is, you know, you can also look about, you know, but how do I act in a certain way, situation? And why do I act like that? Is because, you know, that's who I am. It is my personality. So yeah. And sometimes it's a hidden.
It's hidden, yeah, and I think it's and that's what I mean with the overlooked. It's hidden. It's unconscious. It's maybe in your implicit, even in your implicit memory. We will come back to a certain moment in time where your implicit memory became very conscious, and I think you know the moment where we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Peter, but we already jumping in, of course, into a conversation about journeys of empowerment, but over to you. Of course, I made an introduction. People know listen to the introduction, but who are you?
Gosh, who am I? Well, Peter Zerp. Yes. I live in Amsterdam, born in Rotterdam, but moved for love to Amsterdam. I'm married to my husband from Ireland.
Ah, yeah.
And we live in the center of Amsterdam with our lovely dog, Maggie. So that's my personal situation. I work for a large consulting company, Accenture, now already almost 19 years. Mm. Done a lot of things, but my passion lies in buying, procurement. That's what my professional environment always was, procurement. But over the years, and thanks to Accenture as well, I got more involved into sustainable procurement, inclusive procurement, really moving inclusion and diversity to how you buy things, and working with entrepreneurs that have great innovative idea that they turned into a company that could actually become a supplier of a large corporation. And that's how we build our program, what we now call Supplier Impact and Development. Which means that we try to engage more with suppliers that are not immediately on our radar, but we proactively reach out to meet with them and see how they could become a supplier to us, to our clients, to our tier one suppliers, to our partners, etc. So I got more involved in that. So for the last, I'd say, 15 years, I've been doing that for Accenture.
And can you give, without mentioning a name, but give a specific example of a company that is in the sweet spot of inclusive buying?
Yeah, so
sustainable and inclusive buying.
Right. Yeah. So, I have a lot of examples, of course, but there was this client of ours in the US who wanted to create a more inclusive workspace for people with autism. Mm. And we have a supply development program where we help smaller, diverse businesses to be ready to supply to a large client. Because, you know, there's a lot of things that you have to think about, right? It's not just the RFP and the onboarding, but you also have to perform, right? You're having a great offering, but, you know, large clients can be quite complex. So you need to be able to navigate that, and we help them with that. So when we got that client request, we thought, yeah, we have this company. It's disabled owned. It's ethnic minority owned. And they actually recruit people with autism and train them to work in a corporate environment, but also train the people who work with them to make sure that, you know, that it's well accommodated. So we connected both companies with each other, and they were hired by this client as one of their recruitment agencies and training agencies to help include more people with autism in the workforce.
Beautiful.
It worked out really well. So, yeah, we had four partners involved, because there's also, of course, the business networks that we tap from, the NGOs.
Yes.
So there were four partners involved in this success story. And I thought it's amazing. We have so many of those success stories. And that's why you do it, right? It's about spending more with those businesses, but it's also helping the people in those communities, like people with autism, to participate in the economy, participate in society, feel better about themselves, because, you know, they are able to provide a living for themselves without any struggles.
And that is one word you mentioned, community. That is something, when I think about you, and we met at a community, and I think the first time we met was at a DNNL event.
The Dutch New Narrative Lab. Yes, absolutely. We did.
Yeah. And you can see you're thriving there. And when you're in a community and having all these conversations, you can see.
Absolutely. I always think, you know, if you're a buyer, and I've always been a buyer, you have to be curious. Mm. What I always say is, you know, being in procurement, you have stakeholders, right? You have your internal clients within the company that you work with. And I always say that once you sign the contract with a supplier, you immediately start thinking, okay, but what's next? What's on the market? Because that contract will expire. Are you going to renew it, or are you finding better solutions? So you always have to look for the better solution. You have to be curious, right? You have to be open. You have to have an open mind. And that is why I love supplier inclusion and diversity, or supplier impact and development, so much, because it gives you an opportunity to meet those entrepreneurs. You might not need them immediately, but it helps you. You will remember them. It helps you to remember them and say, okay, I met that company that actually provides what we're now looking for. So let's invite them to a request for information or request for proposal and see what comes out of that. And I think that's what I love about this.
Yeah.
That makes me strive, because I hear those entrepreneurs and they come up with some ideas and I think, wow, how did you get there? How did you come to that idea and turn it into a company? You know, it always excites me.
And how has that trait shaped your work in inclusion, innovation and accessibility?
It did, because, you know, when I started doing this, it was back in 2009, showing my age here, I never heard of it. I heard of inclusion and diversity in the workplace, of course, but never about that we also can do it within our supply chains. And you're right, it's all about access, providing access to companies, you know, giving them a seat at the table, because that's the hardest part for an entrepreneur, is to knock on those doors. They never open. I also never respond to a cold call, because it's never a good time.
No.
And that's why I love this kind of work, because you are meeting each other at the right moment, at the right time, because you're both after the same thing. The entrepreneur wants to talk to you because they have this amazing idea they want to pitch to you. And you are the buyer who actually is at the event to meet those entrepreneurs that could be an asset to you. So you're both doing it at the same time. So you're both open to each other. And that helps, because that way you both remember each other when you need each other.
Yes. Yeah. And the interesting part is that the part that you remember is not what people said, not what people did, but how you made them feel.
Yeah. And you felt them, you made them feel that they matter.
Yes.
And that they could be included in your supply chain in this case. And, you know.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And, yeah.
And Peter, why is that, is inclusion for you so important? Where does that come from?
Well, first of all, where it comes from, yeah. Of course, I come from communities myself. I'm from the LGBTIQ+ community, so I know, it can be a struggle, you know, to be yourself. And I know how important it is that people don't care about it and just accept you for who you are, and actually don't even accept you, right? It's not about accepting. It's about, you know, you're just who you are.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's
period.
About being.
Yeah, it's about being. And also, and that's where we come to, where we met at DNNL, is that, you know, I come to realize only later in life, because later in life that my father was from mixed race. So he originally from Suriname. My mother is white. They met each other, they got married, and, you know, they got two sons who are white. So I never really felt about that was a problem. Until in later life, when I started meeting those entrepreneurs, those businesses, and also hearing the struggles and the challenges, and I go like, you know, I'm just lucky. I guess it made me feel sad in one way, because I was lucky to have that background. But on the other hand, just because the color of my skin, it wasn't a problem to work somewhere, to get access, because I look like the people who hired me. But what if if it was the other way around? What if my mother was black and my father was white, and I would have a different skin color? Mm. Would I be accepted as well? And that made me wonder, like, you know, okay, I need to maybe do a little bit more to help people get through that on both sides. So on one side is the entrepreneur with an ethnic background, LGBTIQ plus background, disabled, women-owned, etc., sometimes veterans, to get access to the people who could recruit them. And on the other side, also help the people who could recruit them to overcome their bias, and whether it's conscious or unconscious, and make them understand that this is just a person who has a great idea, and look beyond the bias that you have.
Thanks for sharing, first of all. And I had a conversation with Kimo Kamara of the OMEC community, and he made me very conscious of something I wasn't very conscious of, and that is unconscious bicultural becoming conscious bicultural. Mm-hmm. So my question for you is, were you always very conscious like bicultural, or don't you think, or don't you feel bicultural? Where is that in that spectrum?
I never did, because I really was brought up Dutch.
Yeah.
So my Surinamese background wasn't so visible. We only went there once in the 80s, when my grandmother from father's side was still alive. So we were able to meet them. I was able to see my father's, see Paramaribo, the capital of Suriname, and where he came from, which was, you know, really amazing. You know, it's the best holiday of my life, best experience. But never really was aware of it. You know, the same things about the discussion here about, you know, the holiday that we have on December 5th. You know, there was never an issue at our home. My father never talked about it. And then, but he already passed away when the whole discussion, so I could never ask him about it. How did you feel about that? Mm. You know. So we were always brought up in a very Dutch white environment. So it never really dawned on me that, you know, there was a difference.
No, and without any real specific genetic markers, other than where we are growing up,
and except for the few experiences that you have, like, you know, you're in a. I remember when my first employer, it was outside of Rotterdam, so you had to take a little pendel van, to get to the office, or a bus, but the bus only went once an hour, so that was not an option, or the bike. And there was this driver who was, and I was the first one to enter the van one morning, and he was giving out to people like, oh, people from Suriname, they're so lazy, and this and that, and this and that. And I thought, but my dad's from Suriname. My dad never was unemployed. He always worked. He learned, and he had a good job. So I told him that, you know, well, actually my dad came into this country in 1955, and he learned a trade and got a job and has never not worked in his whole life. And the man looked at me, your father is from Suriname? How is that possible?
How is that possible?
And then he has to apologize, of course. He apologized. I said, don't apologize to me. You know, just think about, next time, think about what you say. Get rid of your bias, because not everybody is. There will always be lazy people and not lazy people, no matter where you come from. It doesn't matter. But people have this, and it's still the case, right? You see it still here in a very polarized society right now, that you still have that. And I think, you know, we have to get beyond that.
Why do you think we do that?
That's a good question. I think, well, I don't want to talk too much about politics, but I think sometimes people, when they have a failure, they don't want to blame themselves for that. Mm-hmm. They look for others. I see that sometimes. I see that in society. Not so much in my own environment, but I sometimes see that in society, that things don't go right, they prefer to put that on somebody else's plate. Like, you know, I can't find a house, therefore somebody else, it's somebody else's fault, they stole that house from me. And that's also, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier, is about look at your personal journey and look yes. and reflect more. Think about, okay, where did I go wrong and how can I do better instead of blaming somebody else? And I think I see that too much. And yeah, some people take advantage of that, of course. And I think we have to go beyond that, not do that anymore.
Agree. If you reflect on, if we pause and reflect and we look back on your personal journey, are there specific, well, let's say, life-defining moments which helped you to become who you are right now and why you're doing what you're doing?
Are there defining moments? Yeah, I think maybe coming out as a gay man, I think, make me feel, when I finally came out of that closet, how they call it, I felt so liberated. Like, you know, I could finally be myself, right? And the fact that that happened, and I felt so more free, so happy, and more capable of achieving things, I thought, you know, I should make sure that others can do the same.
What helped you, at what moment in time of in your life, and what helped you to take that step to come out? Because that's also part of the helping, right? If you can share, are there a few things or people or community or situation or whatever helped you to, let's say, okay, I waited long, maybe long, I don't know, but and what helped you?
Yeah. I was 29. I think when I finally figured out people like me and went out, met more people like myself and saw how happy they are being themselves. And I thought, okay, I'm not the only one. Mm. Everybody went through this challenge and this struggle. And, you know, actually there's a community that I can be part of where I can feel more comfortable. And then I think that helped me get to the next step, tell my parents, tell my brother. My brother's also gay, so we're both. You know, my parents were blessed with, and my mother is now blessed with four sons.
They're blessed. They're of course blessed with you. And Peter, one question: who came out first?
My brother. He's older.
Okay, but that doesn't necessarily have to mean.
No, that's true. That's true. But he was there first.
Yeah. Did it help you also a little bit or not? Not.
And that's not his fault, of course. No, it's more that, you know, I felt that, okay, people expect me to be straight because the other one is gay. So I felt like, okay, I have to. I have to cannot be myself because, you know, that's. Again, people expect something from me. So I'm conforming myself to the people. And that was all in my head. People did not expect that from me, but that was in my head. So, and that kept me. That kept me from it.
Wow, that must have been also a difficult...
But it's who you are, so you cannot hide it.
No.
You shouldn't. You should not hide it. So that's why I was so happy that finally I was still 29, I was still in my 20s, thankfully. I came out and, you know, I felt so much happier and started, you know, dating and finally found the person, of course, 21 years ago that I wanted to spend my life with. So
lucky you.
Yeah. So far so good.
Very good.
Yeah. And that also made me realize that also, you know, working for a large corporation where obviously you have more people that are struggling with the same issues. You know, I work with a company with a very young workforce. So there's always people that are still going through that phase while being at work. Mm-hmm. So you also want to make sure that you create an environment where they feel comfortable being themselves so that they can actually tell, you know, when somebody asks you on Monday, what did you do for the weekend? I went with my boyfriend to the movies or to a restaurant. But you feel comfortable in saying that instead of saying, yeah, you know, I went out. So that also inspired me to be part of that as well, to help others.
Yeah.
To feel comfortable to accommodate them, but not just persons from the LGBTIQ plus community, because we have so many more groups that also want to be included and feel comfortable being themselves. So and being a buyer, I thought, okay, this is where I can make a difference, because this is what I know. I know how to buy things. So this is where I can make a difference.
Yes, and so that's a life-defining moment for sure. It helped you. It helped yourself, but also by helping yourself, you are open to help a lot of other people who are going through, different stages of maybe coming out. And what are the other moments? There is a specific moment in time where we talked about in our pre-conversation where you became all of a sudden very conscious of something which was unconsciously stored in the body.
I think that was the moment when the king apologized. I think that's what you're referring to. And actually, my current boss had the same thing. And she also grew up in Suriname. And it was a time I was, because my husband's Irish, so we were in Dublin. So I didn't see it live. And I wanted to see, because it was during Katie Cotty. And I wanted to see what happened, because I knew that this was going to happen. And then I looked at the news, and I saw him do it, and all of a sudden I started to cry.
Mm.
And I didn't know where that came from, because I really didn't expect it. I thought, okay, this is great. I'm going to apologize. The prime minister had done it. But I thought, this must be something unconsciously in me. Maybe like a liberating moment, like finally, this community is being recognized for the pain, the pain that's been done to them. And that's also way back part of my father's DNA. So it's part of my DNA. The fact that, my dad was, and it made me think as well, because my dad, of course, his mother was black, his father was white as well. And it must be my great-grandparents must have been a slave.
They grew up a slave. That
realization, like, my goodness, it's not that long ago. It's not that far away. So that was a really defining moment as well. Like, okay, I became more conscious of my background.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
And
it also made me think about, started to think about everybody has something that's different, that makes them special. Whether it's LGBTIQ+, whether it's being black, being a woman, being, whatever. But everybody has something special about themselves that makes them diverse, that makes them different, that makes them not like the rest. And that's wonderful.
And it makes them unique.
And that makes them unique.
Yeah.
And that's what I also meant with personality. It's also part of your, this is who you are.
Yeah.
And it can be, my dad grew up as a child. He was left-handed. I'm left-handed. He was left-handed too. He wasn't allowed to be left-handed. Can you imagine in 2025 that's a problem? But he was punished for him. He had to write with his right hand.
And if you think about that, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why should somebody write with the right hand if somebody is left-handed?
Yeah.
Why?
Why does it matter?
Who are we to determine how another person is going to, which hands it's going to use for writing, right?
And I hope that that applies to everything else. Like, what does it matter if you have a different skin color? What does it matter if you have a beard or, come from a different community? It doesn't matter. Or sit in a wheelchair. You can do exactly the same stuff.
Yeah, and in the pre-conference.
Achieve the same things.
Yeah, agree. So we had in our conversation briefly on this one, you were talking about recognizing hidden diversity as more than appearance, rooted in life experience. So it's really deep ingrained in us without knowing it. And for you, I mentioned the book. Did I mention the book, or did I think I mentioned the book about It Didn't Start With You?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, It Didn't Start With You. I got it from Sasha Martina, and she was like, Michiel, I found a book, and it didn't start with you. And it's about also scientifically proven that generational trauma and also generational whatever happened is partly stored in the genes and in the genes and is transferable. Mm. And I was like, wow, that was really... So I can imagine having that feeling, that reaction, yep. and feeling and all yeah. of a sudden crying without even consciously knowing why.
Yeah.
It's stored. I come to believe that it's stored somewhere in our body, in our in our nervous system.
I think so too. Yeah. Because I definitely didn't see that coming. I thought, you know, I was more excited initially, but then when you actually see it happen, I think that was the moment. And
you mentioned also, and I think, and you are a very curious person. How is curiosity helping you?
It sometimes it can be a challenge as well, because I get too excited about things and others go like, why are you so excited, you know? And because, you know, I love everything, you know. I love when that's why I also love I want to mention him, Ruben Brava, so yeah. much from the DNL, because he brings all those people to the stage, you know, and just literally pushes them on stage. Like, tell your story, tell what you created. And that makes me excited. That's where, you know, I think you need to be open and curious, because, you know, there's so many people with so many great ideas that can help us move into a positive direction. And also the company you work for. And that's why I feel everybody should be more curious about what's next. You know, what can I get excited about? And but also be open to people. You know,
that's an important part.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. One thing I always what you know makes me even more determined is when people say, yeah, it's not yet, we're not yet there, we're not ready yet, you know, we should think about this more. Go like, no, go for it.
Do you apply that same rule to yourself?
Eventually, yes. Over the period of times, yes.
Okay. Yes. That's the honest question, because I can imagine also you being very hard on yourself until you push something out, because it has also meet certain criteria, right? Or yeah. am I wrong?
Yeah. Now, before I started working in this kind of business, I was also like, no, let's wait. And but then you start meeting people who have, you know, such a great spirit. You want them to be successful. You know, why can't they be successful? And you have to give them a chance, right? So yeah.
And that that brings me another question. How do you define success beyond professional achievements?
I think that's a very good question. I think success is that you feel good about yourself. I wouldn't define it in your bank, you know, how big is my bank account, how large is my house, how big is my car, and can I go on holiday 3 times a year more. It's more about, you know, do I feel happy? And you can be happy working in a coffee shop or coffee bar, or you can be happy managing, being the CEO of a large corporation. If that makes you happy, that's what's important. And that's how I would define success. But I wouldn't define it as, you know, I need to have a bigger house, therefore I have to earn more money, therefore I have to, you know, do everything I can to get there. You know, if that's not possible, that's not part of your personality, that's fine. Just be happy with what you have, and you'll have a lovely life. Mm-hmm. That's how I would define success, a personal success.
Would have loved that you said that that we met, I think, 15 years earlier in life, and you would have said that what you just mentioned at that moment in time to me, because it was all about high achieving and identity building, and I feel very much compassion, so I'm not judging my own path, but it would have helped me a lot, because I thought, and also I expected, okay, you have to drive that car, you have to have that house, you have to marry in whatever we married, you have to go on holiday 3 times a year and all those kind of things. You have to wear the next expensive watch, because then you are somebody.
True. And it's also because the neighbor, you know, the neighbor has a zip. It's a simple thing, right? The neighbor has a bigger car, so therefore I have to have a bigger car than he or she does. And why? it's you know, the car will go away again. You know, it's not important. It's how you stand in life and how you feel about yourself that's much more important.
Let's go to communities. Which communities or initiatives are you involved in right now?
So currently, so I'm not a full-time involved anymore in supply diversity. I moved a little bit to a different role at the company, but I'm still involved in some of the NGOs. So part, a very important part of being in supply diversity or in supply inclusion and diversity is that you work with business platforms. We sometimes call them NGOs, non-governmental organizations, that provide us access to the businesses that we are looking for, so that it's easier to make a match and easier to talk to each other and hopefully eventually do business with each other. So one of them is the European Supplier Diversity Program, which we help co-found. It's a corporate-led organization that has a database of the businesses, the diverse businesses. It's primarily ethnic minority-owned businesses across Europe.
Yes.
Currently, Netherlands, Germany, France, but we're looking to go beyond that, be more visible in Europe. Also host events that do certification, because often we want to know, you're telling you're an ethnic minority-owned business, but are you really?
Yeah, so, I saw it. A friend of mine, Karim, is also certified.
See, he's certified as well. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, beautiful.
So so a lot of companies, because also they want to show that they're doing business with those companies and show it in their spend. But in order to do that, they have to 100% verify.
Yeah.
And that's why we do the certification. So I'm the board chair of that organization. So I help them within the board to grow the NGO. I used to be also on the board of We Connect International, which is a global organization we also co-founded back in 2009. For women-owned businesses. So they're all across the world, building networks for women-owned businesses to help them connect quicker, faster, and more successful with corporate buyers. So I used to be in the executive committee for that as well. I'm also still very much involved in the European LGBTIQ plus Chamber of Commerce, EGLCC, which is an organization for that community, does similar work, being a network for those entrepreneurs to connect more with corporate buyers. So these are the organizations. And of course, I still love to collaborate with Ruben from Dutch New Narrative Lab, because I love what he's doing. He's doing a lot. He's very busy, but he's doing a good thing. And that's why I always, you know, also from a personal motivation, want to help and support him with everything he does. So where I can also work with him.
And when you say, I totally agree, Ruben is very driven in the mission he's fulfilling. And when you mention the thing, what do you specifically mean by the thing which resonates with you? So he's doing the thing you say you mentioned, and what's for you that thing, what resonates with you?
I think he's trying to change people's mindsets in being more open and inclusive. And he does it everywhere. I do it from a corporate perspective, of course, because that's my job. He does it everywhere. He's an entrepreneur. He's a social entrepreneur, a tech entrepreneur. He builds this network of entrepreneurs and businesses, but he also looks at policymakers. So he's very much involved in the people who actually make policies in The Hague, in the Netherlands, in government. So he touches all those angles, and that's the thing that he does. I think his hands are in a lot of pies, because he sees place where he can make that difference that can help him to move his towards his ambition to build a more inclusive marketplace. And that's what I love about what he's doing, because it's not just one thing. He sees opportunities everywhere. So the event that we did with the employers organization VNO, that's another thing, right? Because that's where a lot of decision makers are. So he sees that, and that's what I like. He sees an opportunity. He sees an opportunity, and he's capable of actually getting people engaged. People that you would think might not immediately be bought into this, but he manages to get them engaged. And that's a skill, that's a talent.
That's absolutely a talent, and I couldn't agree more. If there's one, well, let's say, thing in the future you would love to contribute to, what would it be?
Oh my goodness. I think what I would like to contribute to is that we, in future, and I know that sounds very naive, that we don't have to talk about this anymore, that it doesn't matter. And if I could, with all my friends like you and everybody else, can make a small contribution to that, towards that goal, that it doesn't really matter, that I not don't, that people don't immediately think when they sit in front of you, first think about, where does he come from? Who is he? Who is she? No, just talk about, you know, who you are, or in my case, what's your offering? What can you bring to the table? How can we together work together and you become a supplier to our organization? How can we make our organization better through your offering? That's what I'd love. And that's what I can apply to my kind of work, but yeah. You can, of course, apply it everywhere in society, that it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. No.
We don't have to talk about diversity anymore because, you know, everybody is diverse, so who cares?
Yeah, that brings me to a conversation I had with a good friend of mine. He's a podcast host, Dirk Jan Hupkes, of Women Disrupting in Tech, Women in the East. Always when I try to give him a compliment and like, yeah, you're really moving forward. He is already 100 plus episodes with very high accomplished women in tech. And I'm like, yeah. And then he said, yeah, always like a little bit like, yeah, it's normal. Yeah, you find it normal for yourself mm-hmm. that you are pushing the needle. And we had an event last Wednesday. We're living in Friday, went last Wednesday mm-hmm. at Female Ventures, and he was moderating it. And as a real male ally, and we were the only two men or the only two or three men within a group of 75 women. And mm-hmm. So I said, yeah, but why do you, if it was normal, I challenged him a little bit, if it was normal, then we don't have to do it anymore, right?
Exactly.
So yeah. you can either take it as a compliment, because it is still a compliment, and but it always makes him a little bit, well, uncomfortable, because it's like, yeah, it's the normal thing to mm-hmm. do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish it was.
That's what we all say.
What we all say. But yeah, yeah. Up until now, it's still highly necessary.
Yeah.
Also, if you look in the numbers when it comes to funding in women, women-led companies,
yeah,
that's a huge. It's under the 2%. Yeah. And I love to say that's 98% still to go. So it's a big potential.
Yeah, but it's only 98%.
It's only 98%. But yeah, it's the big gap and difference is clear.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah.
And but it isn't normal. So that's true. So I said, okay, let's maybe adopt a mission to make male allyship the new normal. And then by male allyship, the new normal, pushing the needle, and that it's not needed anymore. So make it obsolete in 10 years.
Yeah. Male and women, and male and female allies.
Male and female. But do you think it's even... let's go back to inclusion. What is for us so difficult to become more inclusive? What is the challenge we have to face within ourselves? It starts always mm-hmm. with ourselves, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess it brings it back to bias. Maybe it's unconscious bias. Like, we like to talk and work with people that are like us. Sometimes it's very simple. That's the simple thing, is that, you know, that maybe somebody at work only wants to work with people who can talk about Ajax. Mm. And if that person doesn't like soccer, I have no idea what to talk to him about then. And so I'd rather not talk to him then. And so I think that's it. Not having an open mind, like, you know, maybe you don't have to always have to talk about soccer. You can also talk about basketball, or you can talk about a nice restaurant, whatever. So, but some people don't, because they feel if people not sharing the same interests, mm-hmm. maybe don't look like them, maybe look a little different, they feel uncomfortable. So they'd rather stick with what they know and stick with who they are used to, because then you don't have to invest. And I think that could be That's what we need to change.
Because
I know,
yeah.
Because I know, once people start being open to it,
mm-hmm.
the whole world opens to them, and they feel so much better. Because you know they and then they also discover their own hidden diversity. They're kind of like, oh yeah, but I have something that's different as well. Now I can also feel more comfortable talking about it. So I think that's part of it. I think it's also something I also found out is people always try to figure you out, and always try to put you in a box. And I go like, I don't want to be in a box. I'm so many things, you know, being left-handed, gay, ethnic minority, partly, whatever. I'm so many things, so many different things. The people always try to figure you out. And that's why I think, you know, no, that will come later. You know, you will find out that I don't eat fish. I prefer to eat meat or whatever. I'm a vegetarian. It doesn't matter, you know. It's but people always try to create a definition around you. And I think that also sometimes holds people back, because then they don't want to constantly talk about it. They don't want to constantly talk about that they are from the LGBTIQ plus community. They're just, no. I'm Peter.
And why should you?
That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Were you always so comfortable about the feeling, yeah, it's about me?
No, I don't think so. I think before I came out, I wasn't. I was locked inside myself, I think. And I was never able to really show what I could do because of that block. Because I was always afraid that, you know, it would come out. And but once it was all out in the open, I felt I could just, you know, almost rule the world. Because you have that,
by
that,
being yourself.
Being yourself.
Unleashed.
And of course, I'm very lucky growing up in a society where that is possible. You know, it's never 100% perfect, of course. But, you know, we do live in a society where it's not as much as a problem. You know, I can get married. I can live. I can be myself. And
thank God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I also realized that that's not the case everywhere, and that's why we still need to fight. But it is still a fight, right? You see that in what's happening in the U.S. I was listening to a conversation this morning about, you know, transgender people being thrown out of the U.S. Army, and you think, and then people talk about, you know, they're the most motivated people you can have in your army because they want to contribute, they want to be part of it, right? So they're going to fight for their country, and that's also, you know, gives me the realization that, you know, it's still, we still need to fight for it. We still need to make sure that, you know, you should not sit back and think, oh, God, we live in a society where it's all normal. No, it can be taken away so quickly.
That makes me sad. Sad about the realization that try to even imagine how it is to being thrown out. Something you really care about,
yep.
You really are willing to lose your life for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then being thrown out.
And being thrown out. All of a sudden you're not relevant anymore.
Relevant anymore. That's
you become irrelevant.
That hits the nerve.
Yeah. Yeah. That happens. And it happens now, right at this moment.
Yeah.
And that's why we always need to be, of course, you know, that the ultimate goal is that it doesn't matter anymore, but we always have to be conscious that it could easily change again. Think about that. And also, I would like to say to people, if you think about these things, look around you and think about, because it's 80 years ago that we were liberated, right, from the Second World War. My mother is 90 tomorrow, turns 90 tomorrow. She, as a child, knew what it was like to be occupied and have no democratic society, right? So we have to be conscious about, you know, how do we act? Maybe how do we vote? What kind of belief do we have?
And more appreciating that we are in the situation
that you are able to speak your mind.
Because now, with these days, I assume that we all think it's normal.
Yeah.
And it should be normal.
Yeah.
Yet it also can be taken away
in
a split second.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Peter, and if we go back in time and to the 25-year Peter, with all the lived experience you have now, and that was before you were coming out, what would you love to say to the Peter then, with all your lived experience, as an advice, or what would you have loved, if we're able to step back in that time, what would you say?
Be yourself. Yeah, be yourself. You know, you matter. You belong in this as much as everybody else. That's all I can say, I think. Because 25 is 4 years before I actually came out of the closet. So even you know, just be yourself. You know, there's always people who will cherish you, will welcome you, will make you feel comfortable, and it's good. It's okay.
Yeah, that says about all. That's beautiful. And that's also part of the reason why you're doing so much good work you're doing now, to help other people have that feeling going through a lot of things, right?
But it's still not enough. I think we still need to do more. You were just talking about women-owned businesses. You know, women are more than half of the world population.
Yeah.
35, if I've done my numbers right, around 35% are entrepreneurs. The 35% of the entrepreneurs still... Less than 2%, 1% of spend in supply chains is with women-owned businesses. It's odd. It's just, to put it mildly, it's ridiculous. So, and then you have all the other groups that are also still fighting to get a piece of the pie. And that's why we just need to do more. And one other thing I wanted to say, there was this, you know, Jane Fonda, the actress, activist.
Yeah.
And I loved it because everybody just is so negative about the term woke. Because, you know, you're constantly talk about diversity, oh, you're so woke. But woke is beautiful. I think I'm proud to be woke. And she said once in a speech, woke just means that you give a damn.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And
I love that. Yeah. That was so powerful. This was on LinkedIn. I kept watching it over again, I thought, yes, you're right. This is why we're doing this. This is why we're doing this. Keep that. Keep doing that. And that's what it is. You know, you give a damn.
Yeah.
I think if we give a damn, sorry for swearing, about people, about other people, I think that's not a bad thing. Why is that a bad thing?
Of course. How could it even be a bad thing?
Why are we still discussing that? Yeah. Why are we even talking about that?
Yeah, because it's highly necessary.
It's necessary and it shouldn't be an issue.
Wow, we touched upon a lot of things. Building communities, advocating universal accessibility, prioritizing authenticity. But that's maybe one thing I think I would love to go a little bit deeper with you. What does authenticity mean for you? What is authenticity?
Authenticity... with me, goes hand in hand, I think, with honesty. Being honest about yourself, but also being honest about what your intentions are. So be authentic about what you want to achieve. I think also a lot of people are not always... I find it very hard to show their true colors. And it could be, you know, by not being themselves, but it could also be by not really communicating what they want to achieve or what they want from you, or how they want to work with you, want to live with you. So I think authenticity is also about being more open and transparent about, you know, what is it exactly what you want to achieve? And let's see if we can do that together. Because if people constantly guess about what you mean, what you want to do, because you are afraid that they would judge you by it, because of it, you're never going to achieve it.
No, true. but also we need a lot of psychological safe space to share even what we're not sharing at that moment. And being, I think, authenticity also depends on how safe is the environment to be and to feel that you can be as authentic as possible, right?
Yeah, but you also have to make sure that people know that you are open to that, right? That you're not going to judge them.
No, that's what I mean. But with the environment, because we had a core values somewhere in my period at Adidas, and it was all about authenticity. And one other thing was really German. It was really Gründlichkeit and Pünktlichkeit, and very result driven. And everybody was talking about authenticity, and I was like, okay, but how does that work? How can you be your authentic self if so much is all about and almost only about Gründlichkeit, Pünktlichkeit, results, and metrics and the numbers, and that's the only thing that matters? Where are we in where's the human in the loop then?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I was always curious about.
That brings you also to conformity, right? Yeah. We all want to be. You know, we have to be in this box, and I think, but there's so many different avenues. There's so many different ways of achieving things, and you have to be more open about that.
It is. Mm. Peter, I would love to. Round it up, and thank you very much for being here.
You're very welcome.
And if there is one wish for the coming 12 months you would love to share with us, what would that be?
Wish for what?
Wish for society.
Oh gosh. We just had a government collapse here. So what would be my wish? It would be that people really think about themselves about what happened in the last 12 months. So we're going back to the reflection. Mm-hmm. And see, okay, this didn't go well. How can we turn things around in the next 12 months? And really think about, so I hope that people use that, think about that, and use that in how they're going to live and work and act in the next 12 months, and see how can we. There's a lot of negativity at the moment, a lot of negative things going on. And I hope that people start thinking about, okay, how can we change this negative into something positive? And how can we work on it together instead of walking away?
Nothing to add. Thank you very much, Peter.
You're very welcome. Thank you.